Hi there, and welcome to an interview for BGCP with Anna Morozova. This is going to be a supplementary episode to the podcast, we think. And you've just got myself today, Dan, and I'm here with Anna. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
So, we've got a wee list of questions that I'm just going to run through with you, if that's okay, Anna, and then I'll fire them out and you can just give us your knowledge, because I'm very interested in the background of how you get into comics. That's kind of where I wanted to start. I know that you kind of you did the university course that sort of gave you your degree, and then that kind of propelled you into like where you are now. So when was there a certain point? Was it before that that you decided, right, I want to go and I want to do this as a career, or how did that come about?
You know what? I think it's quite an unusual story to get into comics through quite an academic route, if you want.
Uh-huh.
Because essentially I was doing a completely different degree. It wasn't art related, it was design related.
Right.
It was digital interaction design at Duncan of Jordanston, so it was more like kind of technical thing, rather.
Right, yeah.
And then while I was there, I kind of discovered some artists online, and I thought, oh, that would be interesting if I tried doing something like that as well, because I used to draw before, you know, but then I kind of stopped before uni, and after school I had to work and everything, so it was just like, maybe drawing is, you know, a nice hobby I would keep for my drawer. I wasn't sure. I didn't know if it was possible to make it a career at that stage. So yeah, while I was at uni, I essentially was like, okay, maybe I'll give it another try once again. And some of the artists I discovered, they were very much like Instagram artists. And then they would announce that they started a gig at DC or Marvel or something. So in my brain, it was very much like, okay, so if you want to draw and you want to make it a career, then your ultimate goal achievement is essentially going into comics.
Right. I mean, I think that's a big thing for folk, because everybody dreams about doing their hobby, you know, and getting paid for it. That's kind of where we all like to do. So I suppose being given that confirmation that actually this is a viable career, this is something you can live off of, must have been amazing to sort of realise that and go, oh, I can do what I love and I can, you know, make a living.
It's a revelation, but at that point, obviously, I would read comics, you know, but not majorly. I had very little, like, clue of how the process works, and I actually didn't know that it is that difficult, you know, it's very complex. Skill. It's very, broad yet very interesting, deep art form that is so often underappreciated, because comic artists need to do a lot. We need to be capable of drawing everything, not just the thing that we like, if you want to work for publishers, for example.
Of course.
So, and then, you know, like, I was very lucky, essentially, because when I was applying for my university, I didn't know that they had this comic scene. Essentially,
right.
The institution, which was run by Philip Wall and Chris Murray. It was a very unique direction. And when I was in my third year, we were doing like an expansive module, which was comics. So I was like, I'll definitely need to apply. And I completely failed in applying, not because it wasn't portfolio based, but because it was first comes first service.
All right, okay.
Getting into this module.
Sure.
And I applied late because my browser crashed and the spaces were filled within 15 minutes.
After that's horrible.
So yeah, absolutely like missed the boat on that.
Ah, it sucks.
But then I dedicated my last bachelor's project, because in Scotland it's 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So bachelor is like honors project. I combined comics with technology. It was augmented reality project.
Right.
So I did the artwork for it, and I worked on the actual kind of coding part, so it was all working, interactive experience and everything. And I literally gave this project to the course director, because Phil at that point was doing comics masters, and I was like, I don't have a drawing portfolio, but I have this. Do fit me on the master's course. And at that point, it was a very complicated decision for me as well, because I was made an offer to do internship in a big financial company to work as a UX UI designer. And it was very promising. And again, UX UI was something that I was enjoying as well. But it was a big company with lots of resources, huge team. You know, we could do all the fun things and experiment with, you know, interaction design, interactive experiences and everything. And I had like comics course, comics masters, and it was a complete gamble, but I just decided to go with my heart. And I was like, I dropped the offer the last minute, and I was like, I'm going to go into comics and I will see where the road will lead me. And I was
I'm glad it's worked out. I'm glad you did make that choice, but it must have been quite a leap for that, because it is a bit of a chance. It's funny what you were saying before about how you were doing the technical side of things and then the comics side kind of came in alongside that. I mean, obviously though, I think one of the main aspects of like looking at your work and stuff and like where you are now and how you got there, I think a lot of the natural talent you've got kind of shines through in terms of your actual drawing on a page. Because I mean, speaking for myself, I did 3D animation at university and it was great, and again you got to do some creative stuff that was all yours, and then you got to sort of work with other people, and as you're saying, sometimes you had to do things that weren't your thing, but you just kind of had to do your best and whatever. Whereas I love working, you know, with programs and animation software things, but I can't draw. Like, give me a pen and a bit of paper and it will look terrible. Like, I would love to be able to put, you know, drawings on a page like that, but it's never something that I've been able to do. So I think that speaks for a lot as well. But then obviously the skills that you pick up doing the sort of technical side of things at university, I would imagine now it must all kind of feed into what you're doing in your career. You must take a lot from all the different aspects of your education.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes, I must admit, sometimes I feel like, oh, maybe I should have gone for, you know, let's even degree in animation, because many people come from animation, people who work in the comics industry. Uh-huh. And I sometimes feel that, oh, you know, maybe it would be better for myself if I went for like character design or concept art courses. Maybe it would have given me a bit more time to develop. But then the cool part about comics is that we all come from such different points. We all have very different backgrounds and we all bring something new to the table. So even though sometimes I do have those moments of like, well, maybe I should have started a bit earlier with comics in particular, you know, I think that my experience has affected my work and has affected my vision. So this is something that makes me kind of stand out in a good way, you know, just because we're all different and we all stand out in our very own way. So this is my story, and this is what probably is coming through, as you said, like through my art.
I think when it comes to artwork, that's extremely valuable. I think where somebody comes from and sort of what put them there, when you can sort of look at the artwork and you know the background and you can go, oh, I can see how this is, you know, where Anna's got this idea or where, you know. But also, in terms of the university course, the idea of doing a comics course is something, to be honest, it's not something I was aware of until last year or the year before. Because I've loved comics for years, but I was actually through a friend of a friend that I heard, I think somebody else might have been doing it or was thinking about doing it, and I'm like, wow, that's a course you can go and do. And then another guy for the site mentioned something about it, and then obviously yourself having done that course. But what I was wondering is, when we did animation, we had sort of guest lecturers coming in, people from STV and people from like game studios, Rockstar would come in and kind of give guest lectures. Did you guys have that for like comic artists or comic writers? Did you have anybody coming in? And
yes, we did. To be fair, to me the big moment was that by the way was not when I was in master's course, but it was with separate event, which was still arranged by Phil and Chris. They invited Dave Gibbons himself, you know.
Wow.
He was giving us, it was a very small number of students who came. I remember I dragged my portfolio with me, you know, like my sketches.
Good. Neat hustle.
Yeah, and that was Dave Gibbons, and he was like giving a small talk on how to draw, like his process a little bit, like kind of tips and stuff. But then he had the portfolio review session after that. And I was, you know, like a total kind of starstruck moment, and I gave him my portfolio, and, you know, like getting this kind of approval and words of encouragement from Dave Gibbons, and so the first interaction with the comics pro, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, we had guests, and there's like a number of well-known people, you know, who do classes, but I must say, unfortunately, lately, the institution itself had taken a slightly different course, so it became incredibly difficult for, you know, program leaders to you know, keep inviting people and essentially asking them to do classes and work for free, which is never a good practice, because you always want to give the pros something back, and considering how busy they are, you know, it's not like they're sitting and doing nothing. So they need to, sometimes they would agree and do like stuff for free even just because they're in good kind of relationship with the program leaders. But there was very little support from the institution itself, I'm afraid. And it really, like, it's heartbreaking for me to say, but it saddens me that such course didn't, kind of like, it was all on the initiative of people who were like fans of comics, who wanted to like prove how underappreciated this art form is. And unfortunately, many people were like, oh yeah, comics, we're not quite sure. Why? Yeah. For?
That's quite sad. Because goodwill goes a long way.
It is quite sad, you know, and especially in the institution which kind of promotes drawing very much, but drawing very much from the fine art perspective. And nothing bad against like fine art, but like fine art is also difficult, you know, it's obviously. But from like what I saw in the last years is that people who kind of rule the institution, they don't support something they don't understand themselves.
Right.
And to me, it's very sad when people can only work with what they understand, because sometimes I think you need to be open for different visions, for different disciplines. You can't just be extremely narrow and just do something that you know works, because there are other people who can bring so much. And it doesn't necessarily need to be that you must be an expert in it, but at least some support would be nice.
Definitely.
So it kind of took like a very dark turn here, but...
No, I appreciate you, honestly.
I do feel like I must say it, because, you know, some people wouldn't quite get, you know, like, why did we stop, like, having, you know, all those, like, high-profile guests, or why do we not have, like, as many events as we could have? Because of budget, because of lack of support.
Yeah. I mean, it must be, though, now that you're on the other side of it, and you've kind of got your degree and you've got your career off the ground and you're doing, you know, you're out there working, it must be quite fun to be on the other side of it, because back when you were a student, you must have been looking up on the stage at these people going, oh, they're so lucky they get to do this every day and this is their job. Whereas now you're doing interviews with folk like me and you're speaking to people and you're kind of getting to be the other side of that. So that must be amazing to kind of realize that.
Amazing. It's amazing, but seriously, like, it's such a fascinating like process to actually, I feel incredibly lucky to be able to do this job, you know, like when you do something creative and there are people who appreciate it, there are people who like your work, it's extremely encouraging, you know, and because obviously when you're like a creative person, you're extremely critical of everything you do, like most people are.
Sure.
And to me, like the hardest part of the whole thing is obviously like, you know, drawing is always difficult, but it's the part that I enjoy. But the hard part is to actually look at the finished work and realize that now it needs to go to the public, and it's like up to the public to decide what they want to do with it. They may like it, they may dislike it, they may want to see more, they may criticize it, and you need to learn to live with it.
Yes.
Hope that makes sense, because it's...
I can't speak for the listeners, but it certainly makes sense to me. I'm very familiar with the idea of being a perfectionist. But when you've got deadlines, there has to be a point where you say, right, it's good enough. It's, you know, because people are relying on you. So you just,
yeah. But it's a good thing about the industry, you know, because I realize, for example, if you had all the time in the world, the chances are you're not going to finish anything in the nearest future. You know, you do need this very strict system. And this is the part where, like, comics in particular becomes quite tricky, because, like, everybody wants to do the best job. They want to do the best pages that can, you know, and sometimes the deadlines are very tight, so you need to like cut the cloth to fit, essentially.
And I guess when you're doing something creative and putting it out, there must be a certain point where it's no longer yours, it then belongs to the reader. It belongs to the public. And I think that's a thing. I've heard a lot of musicians say things like, you know, these iconic songs that they've written. If they had known how big that was going to go, they would never have written it, because it's too much pressure. You know, so you just need to do your best and put it out. And then if people love it, they love it. And that's, I think that's kind of where you need to look at it from.
Exactly. Plus, you always need to remember that at some point you need to get out of your head. This is actually like a very interesting point that Dave Gibbons gave us when he gave the talk, and he said, you know, the most interesting part is that only you know how you want it to look like ultimately, because other people will only see what they see on the actual pages or on their screens. Uh-huh. They will never know what was your ultimate, what were you striving for, yeah? What were your what was your ultimate goal? To them, what they actually see, maybe perfect as it is, you know. Only the creator will think, oh, this is nowhere near what I imagined, you know, I wanted it to be like an amazing masterpiece, you know.
Oh, yeah,
to people who look at it, it might be a masterpiece in its own right.
Yeah. When you're really close to something, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you need somebody that's never seen it before to look at it and give an opinion. Sometimes it'll be a good thing and they'll say, oh, this is amazing, what are you worrying about? Or sometimes they'll say, oh, you've actually missed a mistake there, and you're like, oh, I was looking at it so close that I missed that, you know. So sometimes a fresh pair of eyes really does kind of open up your perspective, I think. Sorry, just wanting to move into the more sort of technical side of your work. I've got, again, because I'm not an artist, because I can't draw, I've got loads of questions, like, how you kind of your process and how you get to a certain point. One of the things I was wondering in terms of like drawing for a comic, that is a still frame, so you're having to sort of capture a lot of dynamism and flow in this like still image, and that's always something that I've kind of wondered about. Something especially when you're telling stories that have got like a lot of high stakes and high emotions. How do you capture that? You know, is it just down to showing sort of detailed character expressions? Is it down to like folks' posture on the panel? How do you sort of bring that across in a still image?
You see, it's interesting because like every person who draws will probably give a completely different answer to this. You know, because some people start with like perspective and anatomy.
Right.
In my case, I start, because so far I've been drawing comics digitally, okay? I capture the faces, I capture the emotion first,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is quite rough, it's not anatomically correct, you know, far from it. So it's just that this is kind of very rough, you know, like, or if it's like some motion action, then I also try to capture that, like in kind of quick lines. And then I work from it, and if I work digitally, then I can, you know, like kind of cut and paste bits around and like compose it and things as I go.
Right.
So yeah, this is where digital process may be very, very handy, you know, because you mm-hmm. can maintain, you know, this kind of movement and emotion, because you're kind of, you have the freedom to manipulate it as you go. Talking about traditional art is going to be different. And at the moment, I'm actually planning on switching to traditional art.
Right.
So, in this case, the process will have to change. So we'll have to work in a bit more schematic way and do like proper kind of thumbnails and like drafts and then transfer them into the actual pages. So it will be interesting to see how the dynamics will change. It will be interesting for me to actually have a look at, you know, the digital kind of pages I used to do and the traditional ones, because I'm sure there will be differences. But one thing for certain, I will definitely still keep kind of focusing primarily on the characters first, on their emotion, their expressions, and then kind of basing the rest of the page around that.
I'm looking forward to seeing the result.
Yeah, also leaving enough space for the letters, because this is a problem, you know.
Yeah, because that's something else I always think about. I'm like, this looks so good when it's all finished, but what does it look like without the lettering? What does it look like without the text on it? But obviously, you can go online and you can see some panels without the text, and it's strange seeing all these gaps, big blank, you know, and you're like, right, okay, that's why they're there, so that they can then, you know, be used for that. That was something else I wanted to ask you about, though, in terms of, like, when you read a comic, I mean, obviously, traditionally, you go from left to right, top to bottom, but nowadays, sort of, different panels can be placed in different places, and artists have their own sort of approach on how to lay out a page. When it comes to sort of laying out a page worth of panels, how do you go about that? Do you look at the script of what has to be shown in that page and kind of storyboard that, or how does that work?
I'm weird, you know, when it comes to that, I'm very weird. Like, I've heard this comment from the people who kind of witness me work, and they're like, what are you doing? You know, this is like bizarre and strange. But I usually read script once. I rarely have it. I kind of memorize it. I memorize those kind of key points, because as I read it, I see like which panels I want to kind of bring forward and what I want to be the emphasis. And yeah, so I kind of keep the script nearby, but I notice that I kind of rarely refer to it. Because I usually kind of memorize how many panels per page roughly, and then as I go, I sometimes may just double check once the page is done, you know, if I've done it correctly. Because again, when you work digitally, you have the freedom to do it. Obviously, again, I have to change now as I start working on digital paper. You don't have the freedom of, you know, fixing things. But yeah, you know, so far, I quite like experimenting with the layouts. I have pages when it's quite structural, when you have the kind of boxier design.
Sure.
I also have those pages when it's quite spatial, you know, it's like things kind of lower the place, interacting with each other. So,
It does, to me, when I'm reading a comic, you know, it really does change the feel of it. It can totally change the flow, and I think it really is important and quite an underrated aspect. I mean, people look at art a lot of the time in a comic book, they're just looking at the actual quality of the drawing, but I actually believe the presentation and layout is almost as important. I feel like it's a huge part of experiencing it.
I totally agree with you. It's like, it's interesting, you know, like formats, they have very kind of, and it's a special way, it's a special kind of impact in a way. Mm-hmm. It's different to the quality of drawings, but it dictates the rhyme and it dictates the pacing of the story very much so. Like, for example, if you think of Watchmen, you know, it's a very structured layout, it's very structured pace.
Sure.
It works perfectly for the narration of it. And some comics you will see, you know, it's like, I'm struggling to remember, you know, the artist's name, but it's like, I remember those fantastic pages from Batwoman. It was like fantastic and watercolors, and the entire layout is so fluid. It's like, there's almost no boxes there.
Right, yeah.
But it doesn't really ruin your reading experience, it still flows greatly. Sure. And bring something completely different to the story, you know, apart from the actual art.
Well, that was also one of my questions. I take it, I mean, I know that when I'm doing something creative, I take inspiration from kind of everything, whether that's, you know, it's other people's work, or whether it's just sort of things that I see in real life that I'm like, oh, I could put that in my, you know, animation or whatever. I assume when you're reading other people's comics and you see certain techniques, is there times where you're like, oh, I didn't think of that, I wish I'd thought of that, or, you know, just different techniques that you can pick up along the way that you see that you think I could adopt that?
Yes. I try to, like, look at everything, and I try to kind of diversify my inspirational Rolodex.
Because
you know, like, there's an interesting point. Okay, so when I was doing my master's course, I was doing my comics and, like, my first experience drawing comics and everything. At that time, I had, like, an Instagram page, the previous one. And at first I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm going to have access, you know, to this amazing inspirational artist. I'm going to, like, see what I can possibly adapt.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that, you know, there was almost so much inspiration. And unfortunately, it wasn't always very diverse, because there are certain trends, you know, and technically you can look at stuff and you can appreciate the technical ability, you know, that the artist utilized, because technically it can be absolutely amazing, fantastic render and finish. But in terms of, if we talk about style and the actual idea behind it, then you start seeing that there are kind of things that can become a little bit repetitive, because this is what happens when people love something and they think this is popular, they try to learn from it. And then it turns into this kind of, like, I don't want to say a copycat culture, because obviously people do it slightly differently, but you can see it's kind of the same trend that's going through multiple people without even changing that much.
Right.
Bizarrely. So I started looking at what's popular now, but I also started checking out the kind of stuff that was popular before. And I discovered, you know, like the artists from kind of past generation, but whose techniques were so different to what we're seeing nowadays, yet they were popular at that time, you know. So I just kind of started looking at things from different kind of time frame.
Sure.
And putting it all together into one thing, because in this case, it kind of helps to not stick to what's popular at the moment, because it will definitely change.
Sure.
It will change. But it's important to keep like a track of what is popular at the moment, but also look at something very different, something absolutely, you know, sometimes even not comics related at all, maybe art, you know, just fine artists or, you know, cinematography or something.
Totally, because that was kind of leading into my next question. I was going to say, is there any things that you avoid when you're drawing a comic? Is there any big things that you're like, right, no, I can't do that? I mean, I would imagine if you draw something and you think, oh, this is adopting a certain trend, and it's maybe something you'll try and stay away from, or is there anything else that you're like, you know, that's a big no-no kind of thing for when you're drawing?
Not at the moment, to be fair, no. Although I will say that I do try to stick to realism. In a way, it's not very realistic drawings I do, you know. They're still stylized. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about the anatomy, I try to go for slightly more realistic anatomy rather than cartoony. Mm. And though I'm a huge fan of cartoon styles, you know, like absolutely love it. But I think that this style I'm kind of utilizing is a little bit more natural to me. So yeah, I won't say there's like a huge, like it's like a big no-no to me. It's just like I've not drawn cartoons as much. I did draw them for like slightly different projects, like an animation project, an educational one I did, but not in comics.
Well, just obviously when we found out we were getting to interview you and stuff, and I went to sort of research your work, I really enjoy the balance that you find between making something stylized and still making it realistically proportioned. Because I mean, I know that's a personal taste thing, but I do think there's a fine line sometimes between going too stylized and going too realistic. But I really like the balance that you strike in your work.
So I just wanted to add here as well, you know, it's interesting, like when talk about comics artists and artists in general, it's like very thin ice. It's like it's very interesting balance between how do you keep yourself sort of marketable, keep yourself hireable, but at the same time you keep your own voice visible in your work.
Well,
sorry to interrupt you, but just before you go in, this is kind of my next question. What I was going to ask is, when you get an opportunity to work with a big company like 2000 AD, how much of that creativeness do you keep, and how much of it do you need to think, right, this has to fit into the aesthetic that's been pre-established for a book like Judge Dredd? How do you strike that balance?
You see, like in 2000 AD is, I think it's always been great in that respect, that it provides enough space for more than enough space for uniqueness. You know, it's like weekly anthology. So if you go through the artwork there, everybody is so different.
Yeah.
So this is very like encouraging, and it gives you this kind of rebellious freedom to do a bit something mischievous, yet something, you know, visually appealing. But this is not to say that they do not have certain level that you need to achieve, you know, to be able to to unleash your creativity if you want. So I don't know, to me, it's a very interesting topic. When I draw, I don't think of it too much, but when I analyze things, I realize that this is very difficult balance to keep, you know, because I have friends who have amazing art styles and they're extremely exceptionally talented, but at a certain point they have to think of going to more kind of indie publishing, because, you know, they utilize their style in the worlds that they've created, imaginary worlds that they've created. But whether they can apply their style onto something scripted, this is different, you know. And there's no right or wrong answers, you know, because we're so different, the tastes are so different, the standards are so different for different publishers.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow, the topic remains open to me, a mystery.
I suppose it's doing your job, like yours. I guess you're always learning, you're always kind of expanding your knowledge, and you never really stop. I mean, I'm sure there's folk, these sort of industry titans like your Alex Rosses, etc., and Dave Gibbons, they're probably still learning, you know, they're probably still looking at things and coming up with new inspirations. And I guess that's the beauty of doing something like this, you never really master it, you just keep going and keep going. And
no, you know, like, and it's bizarre when you meet those like amazing pros in real life and you look at their work and it's very intimidating, and they're there being like, oh, actually I'm not happy about this face, you know, I'm not happy about this, you know, like, what are you on about? This is fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And you realize that pretty much everyone is like that. And I remember even, like, I was watching, like, it was Dave Gibbons' interview, I can't quite remember what it was for. He was saying that, I think it was actually 2008's 40th,
right,
you know? And he was saying that, you know, like, every time you start a drawing, you're thinking that you're going to make the best art you've ever done. Then by the time you finish, you don't want to look at it anymore. You actually sometimes put it in a drawer, you can bury it there.
Yeah.
And you try to think that it never happened. But then 10 years later, you open the drawer, you find this artwork, and you think, oh, it's actually not bad, it's actually all right.
Sure.
Because you no longer look at it from the creator's point of view, you're looking at it as just a general viewer, a general reader, and they're not going to notice the flaws. Well, some of them, they will notice flaws. Some people will appreciate it for what it is.
No, totally. I don't know if you're able to, but are you able to tell us what you're working on just now? You were mentioning the traditional work that you're going to do.
I'm waiting on a script from 2008's editor, Matt Smith, but wow, I'm not sure if I can tell you what it's going to be, because they've not announced it kind of officially yet, so I don't know if I'm allowed to speak or not.
Okay,
but it will be out relatively soon, so it's not something that's going to take, you know, like a year for the media or something. So, yeah, will soon to be revealed.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm quite excited because I really want to try it, drawing it traditionally for once, so it's going to be quite challenging.
Good.
But that's a good thing in art. Every job needs to be more challenging. That's how you.
That's how you better yourself, right? Definitely. So is there anything you want to plug just now that you're sort of working on, you want to promote, or anything that you want to give a shout out, or maybe we can attach your Twitter handle or.
A Twitter handle, right, okay, I need to, like, yeah, my Twitter handle, let me double check.
That's okay, take your time. I need to do that myself, okay, don't so worry, it's not this year.
Yeah, it's, if you want to find me on social media, okay, so this is @_AnnaMarazova, all together in one word. And if you want to find me on Instagram, then you can go to @ANNYA.Marazova, and that will be me. The spelling is important because I have a very common name, so there are multiple people with my name, so
We'll make sure we attach all that and the links below, etc. I could talk to you all day. This has been brilliant. It's been great getting an insight into an actual mind of an artist that's working in the industry.
Learning, come on. I still consider myself as sort of, I don't want to say like a beginner, you know, but kind of an up and coming, because there's a lot for me to do, there's a lot for me to learn, so I'm nowhere near in the mindset of, you know, I've kind of made it. No, I'm like, yeah.
I totally appreciate you saying that, and that's fair enough if that's your view. But looking at your work, I don't think that comes through. I think looking at your work, yeah, it looks like somebody's been doing it for decades. I think your work's phenomenal.
Oh, come on. Thank you so much. No, I really appreciate it.
No, if it was rubbish, I would tell you. Honestly, it's great.
I appreciate it too. You know, like, I never actually... obviously, you know, like, it's really important to kind of learn to receive various feedback, you know. Obviously, there will always be people who will not like work, and it's fair enough. So if I still have an opportunity to say something to, like, people who, like, work in creative industries, you know, it's just... take all this, like... I know it can be sometimes quite disheartening to read something negative about your work, but there will always be people who absolutely love your style and take criticism, you know, lightly. It's just something you can utilize to improve your work in the future. That's it. You're constantly progressing. Sometimes we have moments of stagnation, but we're here to overcome it, you know, and we're lucky to do creative jobs, which encourage us to do so.
That is sound advice. I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much for your time, Anna. This was a pleasure. Hopefully we get to speak again at some point.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I hope my accent wasn't too horrible.
Absolutely not. No, you were brilliant. Thank you. So that was an interview with the brilliant Anna Morozova. She was phenomenal to chat to. We got to get some really good insight there, I felt. I really enjoyed speaking to her from a creative perspective, and really getting to sort of delve into how she produces the work that she does. We will be back next week with another episode of the BGCP podcast for you guys to listen to. The reviews that we've written this week, and the website link, and Anna's social links, and all that good stuff will be linked in the description below. Thanks again. All the best. This is Dan for BGCP. Cheerio.